Welcome to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. Pork is the meat of choice for many families in Vietnam. Now, a South Dakota specialist is planning a journey to the country in order to exchange knowledge about production as well as culture. Bob Toller is an extension swine specialist and professor at South Dakota State University. He's been selected for the Fulbright U.S. Scholar Program. He'll spend January through May of 2018 working with the Vietnam National University of Agriculture in Hanoi. He joins me now in the STPB studios at the University of Sioux Falls. Bob Toller, welcome.
Thank you, Lori.
Thanks for being here. You're a man in much demand. Sort of hard to get you on the show because of all the places that you're going and speaking. Tell me about wanting to do the Fulbright Scholar Program and what sort of drew you to it.
You know, I've seen some other faculty members from SDSU who have gone on Fulbrights, they've been great experiences for them. I've had a brother-in-law that did a Fulbright, and as at my point in my career, it's time that I want to give back. And so as you look at those opportunities, I think the Fulbright Foundation, the Fulbright Fellowship is a great way to do that.
First time you went to Vietnam?
First time I went to Vietnam was in 2009. And I'd been to China a lot. First time to Vietnam was a lot different than I expected. It really looks a lot like China. I mean, their economy is thriving. They've got a young population. The middle class is growing. So from an economic standpoint and from a family style, things are going very well there.
So do they have an equivalent of an extension service? Does that exist in Vietnam, something that you recognize as having the same intent?
It's kind of interesting. When I first went there, we were working with people from the U.S. Soybean Export Council and the U.S. Grains Council in there, and the office that was run by Vietnamese said, yep, we do have an extension service. They had like 3,000 extension employees, but they had no budget. And so they couldn't travel, they couldn't help. So this will be something new. And, you know, the Fulbright's part teaching, part research, and also hopefully I'll be able to get out and work with producers out in the country as well.
What's the difference, or how different is sort of the rural or out in the country, as you say, swine production versus something that's happening in the city in Vietnam? What do you already know?
It's a huge difference. You know, if you look at their livestock production, still the majority of it is backyard production. And that means, I mean, you've got two pigs, I've got two pigs, and somebody's got a neighborhood boar, and the magic happens. And they feed it scraps and those kinds of things, environmentally not very very strong, you know. And so just like other countries, as there's more jobs in town at factories, some people go there, the ones that stay home and farm, try to improve their operations. So we're looking at kind of moving them to a little bit more modern pork production from where they are right now.
Right, what does that look like in your mind? I know you don't know mm-hmm. everything yet, but it's not going to look the same thing as it looks here, but how can it What yep. do you think? What do you anticipate yep. that you can do to help move them in a direction that you think will be beneficial to them?
Yep. Actually, I think it'll really look a lot like, you know, in the late 70s, early 80s here, you know, because up in that point, you know, every farm had beef cattle. They had a few dairy cattle. They had pigs. They had poultry. So it was a very diversified operation. Then into the 90s, we moved and did a little bit more consolidation. And I think the same type of thing is going to happen there. The people that are good producers and there's economic advantage, they'll want to grow. They'll want to take advantage of some of those technologies. And I think that's one of the things that I can really help them with, because I've been around extension for a long time in pork production, so I've seen how those changes progress. So, you know, as you look at Vietnam, here's some ways to get to your goal to be, you know, more productive, more environmentally and economically sustainable. And so here's some things that we tried in the United States. Here's some things that worked, and here's some things that didn't work. Mm-hmm. And hopefully we can help figure out which ones will work in that situation and help them move forward.
Is diversification still important? Is that an important component of sustainability, or is that specialization an area to really consider?
I'm a big believer in diversification from the standpoint of if you're just relying on one commodity, and you know, and the price for that commodity goes down, or your inputs for that commodity go drastically up, and then financially you're in a world of hurt, you know, versus if you have some diversification and, you know, the pork market goes down, but soybeans are up, or beef cattle are up, or whatever, you've got another enterprise that can help you be there. So I think it's nice to focus on certain enterprises and do a really good job on them, but you need to have a little bit of diversification for your whole family to be able to make it.
What do you think, talk about the research aspect. You know, what are you hoping to learn as part of the of your time in Vietnam?
You know, I always joke about, you know, I was trained as a swine nutritionist at Kansas State, and I always joke that that nutritionists in the United States are probably the laziest ones around, because basically we have the cheapest corn and soybean meal in the world, and we've got some synthetic amino acids and that kind of stuff, but our diets are really pretty easy to do. But when you go to other parts of the world, corn and soybean aren't the cheapest thing to use, and so you might be looking at 10, 15 different ingredients that we put in. Tapioca, for example, would be an ingredient that would be useful in Vietnam and some other things. And so just looking at how to utilize those other feedstuffs in pork production.
All right, so feeding of scraps in the backyard is not going to
cut it. Yep, we want to move away from that for a lot of reasons. First of all, you know, nutritionally, it's not great for the pigs. Secondly, you know, we always worried about the disease trichinosis. And that was, it was a parasite. You got that when pigs were fed scraps and that kind of stuff, and it wasn't cooked. And that's, we're paying for that a little bit in the swine industry, because anybody that had grandma cook pork, I mean, she would cook it really brown. I mean, because you had to kick it hot to get rid of the trichina. Well, trichinosis is not a problem in U.S. pork today, because we don't feed scraps. And so you'll have a much better eating experience if you cook it to 145. But so, yeah, we want to move away from scraps. And again, we want to have a more balanced nutritional program for those pigs. Better genetics, better environment, and better nutrition.
All right, let's talk about the program itself. How do you get prepared to go? And how long are you then in Hanoi?
Yep, it's going to be exciting. I leave on January 2nd and will be there through May 31st. My wife, Karen, who's a 7th grade English teacher at Mickelson Middle School, she'll leave on the 13th, because that January 13th, that's when their semester is over. So the Fulbright program has done a great job of preparing us for this. They had a pre-orientation meeting in end of June. They had previous Fulbright people from Vietnam in there and said, okay, here's the things that worked for us, here's that didn't. Here's how you do your banking, here's how you do your rent, transportation, those kinds of things. That helped a lot. Having some friends, again, working for the U.S. Soybean Export Council and Grants Council in Hanoi will be a big help, too. The embassy is there to help. And actually, on staff, they do have a Fulbright person on staff at the embassy.
All right, so I'm going to ask the economic question. Is there an opportunity to export some soybean and corn to these to increase trade with Vietnamese swine farmers in order to give them the nutrition and help us as well? Is that part of this, or
I mean, it's not part of the Fulbright program, but that's one of the reasons I selected to go to Vietnam, or asked to go to Vietnam, is because if you look at that, they are like either fourth or fifth largest number of sows in the whole world. And if you look at importing soybean meal, they're probably in the top five countries of importing soybean meal, and they're fairly high up in corn. So if we can help make their pork production more efficient, that's going to mean, and more profitable, that means they're going to be looking at buying more soybean, buying more corn. And if you look where U.S. is in relation to other countries, I mean, from South Dakota, rail to the Pacific Northwest, and then ship to Asia is probably the cheapest and fastest way to go. So we would then be the soybean meal, the corn, the DDGS provider of choice for Vietnam. And again, huge, huge number of pigs, a lot of poultry. Aquaculture is very big there as well.
You talked about environmental challenges. Mm-hmm. What are those? Elaborate.
You know, yep. And again, I think one of the biggest ones is how you handle the manure, you know. And when you have a small farm, you don't worry about it. I mean, you know, just it disappears, you
right.
know. And yeah, and you have to realize that even if you don't have 10 pigs or you have 100 pigs or whatever, those nutrients are going to end up somewhere. And so, and I think the other thing, and we've worked with in China a little bit as well, is, I mean, a lot of these soils or fields have been farmed for 2,000 years, okay? You know, and so manure has some really valuable nutrients that help build up that soil. So instead of looking at livestock manure, swine manure as a waste that we got to get rid of, look at it really as we've always typically done in the Midwest. It's a great crop nutrient. So helping them work that into their cropping systems to not only produce better pigs, but using that manure to produce more rice, more wheat, and those types of products.
And does that translate to any crop? Does it translate to rice just fine?
Sure. Yep.
Because
all
no
it is
restrictions,
you know,
there. Yeah.
Yep. Exactly. So just like we need amino acids and energy, if you look at crops, whatever crop, it's going to need nitrogen, it's going to need phosphorus, potassium, some of the micro minerals, and livestock manure swine manure provides that.
All right. What is it about pigs? I mean, they're smart creatures. Mm-hmm. What are some of the challenges of then, you know, from the back, moving from the backyard to, you know, to a larger mm-hmm. production? Are there cultural challenges to that?
You know, I've been in Vietnam about 7 times, and I really don't think so. You know, I think, you know, they're great business people. And if you can demonstrate that, you know, they're going to make more money, it's going to be better for them and their communities. Because that, out in the country, out in the rural areas, the communities are still very, very strong, very important. So if you can help that community and that family get better, that's a good thing. I think, and just like anywhere else in the world, is increasing the management skills. Mm. You know, if something just kind of a byproduct that's out there, you know, you give it some scraps or whatever, you don't manage it very well. If it doesn't get bred this year, well, it's going to get bred 6 months later. You know, no big deal. And as you become, as you try to be more efficient, you can't do that. You know, so basically helping them increase the management skills. And a lot of it's just animal husbandry types of things.
Sure. What do you anticipate learning from them?
Man, that's a great question, Lori. You know, we've all, or most of us, have watched the Ken Burns series about mm-hmm. Vietnam. And actually, my friend Chien was in Hanoi. I mean, he's 63 during the war and talks about it, you know. And so I think, you know, learning more about that from their standpoint. And the interesting thing on my trips there, I mean, they either love or like Americans, which is just boggles my mind. But, you know, you saw hints of that in the Ken Burns series as well. But, you know, they're great people, all just like everybody else in the world. You treat them well, they treat you well. But the Vietnamese are special. You know, also from an educational standpoint, how they do things from the research standpoint. You know, okay, they look at all these different ingredients. How do you decide what works well? Certainly aquaculture, we don't have much of that here yet. We probably will. And some of those issues as well.
Define aquaculture. I don't think I have a good grasp of what that means.
Yep, aquaculture is basically fish, shrimp, those types of things. Okay. You know, so if you, shrimp production would really be big there. Actually, if the delta in Vietnam is a huge exporter, well, they used to call it catfish. You know, it's a catfish breed, and then the U.S. catfish farmers sued them, so they can't use that name. So it's being imported to the U.S. under a different name, and I forget what it is. But, yeah, in the Delta, I mean, catfish is really big down there.
All right. How are you going to communicate with folks back in America and your wife taking a sabbatical from teaching? Talk a little bit about her opportunities and the kids, how they are going to get to make the journey with her.
Yep. Karen is a great teacher, and what she's decided to do is have a video blog. And so once a week, she's going to take her students, her 120 seventh grade English students, to Vietnam. And so with videos, with a blog, is like today we're going to the wet market. And a wet market is where most people in Vietnam buy their meat. And what that means is the pig, the cow, the chicken, whatever, is harvested at midnight. The warm carcasses go to the sale area, not refrigerated. And at 6 in the morning, you go out there and you buy your daily meat, you know. And as the day goes along and it gets a little warmer outside, the price drops because it's not refrigerated. But that's culturally how they do it. You know, she'll go to places like the Hanoi Hilton, where John McCain was. Right. Go to the Coochie Tunnels, go to the coffee production areas in Central, Hay Long Bay. But every week, take her students somewhere along with her to help broaden what their perspective is.
All right. And what will you be doing to communicate back with other producers in the state?
Yep. And, you know, the technology is incredible, Laura. You know this much better than I do. But, I mean, simple things like Skype and Skype video. Anywhere you have internet, you've got wireless internet even, and those things work out relatively well. So I'll be also having a blog on the SDSU Animal Science homepage, probably get some stuff to South Dakota pork producers. Yeah, but probably the biggest thing is being able to communicate with our two grandchildren. So,
right?
Yep.
Well, let's just close with this. You know, we just recently did a 2-hour special on this program and across other platforms at South Dakota Public Broadcasting about the drought and commodity mm-hmm. prices and the new farm bill. And I'm wondering how that's affecting swine farmers in South Dakota.
Yep. If you look at it from the standpoint of how much does it cost to produce a pig? About 65 to 70% of the cost of production of raising a pig is feed, okay? 80% of the feed is corn, 15% is soybeans. So I mean, hate to say this, but when you have low corn prices, low bean prices, that actually helps pork producers. And again, it goes back to that diversification. So right. if you're a crop farmer and you've got some livestock, well, while you may not make any money on that corn, you can certainly add value to it by feeding it to, you know, swine, beef cattle, dairy cattle, those types of things. So, I mean, you know, we've looked at ethanol and soy processing plants as one way to add value. But historically, livestock's been a great way we've added to those commodities is feeding them through livestock. So that helps. The other thing that's interesting that I'm getting a lot of questions from young producers now. Mm. I mean, they want a son or daughter wants to go back to that family farm. And on, you know, ground land prices hasn't dropped much in South Dakota. And so here's somebody at 22 years old. They want to go back to the farm. They go to the banker, and the banker won't loan them money for land because right now at these commodity prices, it's not going to work. But they will loan them money to get involved in livestock production, especially if it's a contract situation, because that guarantees them X amount of income. And so we're seeing a lot of young people now taking a look at contract pork production as a way to work back into that family farm. And so that's been pretty exciting.
Hmm. And what do you need out of a new farm bill? What's your agenda?
Yep, you know, I have none. You know, I'm just a simple swine nutritionist guy who works with great producers and great students at SDSU. So,
all right, Bob Toller, thank you so much. Fulbright Scholar heading to Hanoi in January. Hopefully when you come back or even before, we'll connect with you and see how it's going.
That would be great. I'd love to do that.
All right, thanks for your time. We appreciate it.
Thank you.